Next case is 97-1190, United Transportation Union Insurance Association versus Roger Tracy, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Novak.
May it please the Court. This case is an appeal from a decision of the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals, and the case concerns the levy of a use tax assessment against the United Transportation Union Insurance Association. The United Transportation Union Insurance Association is an organization organized under Chapter 3921 of the Ohio Revised Code as a fraternal benefit society. As such a society, and under the provisions of 3921.40, as it was in existence at the time relevant to this case, this fraternal benefit society is declared to be a charitable and benevolent institution that is exempt from all and every state, county, district, municipal tax other than the franchise tax and real estate taxes. Because of this specific exemption, United Transit, UTUIA, or the society as I would refer to it, challenged an assessment made by the Tax Commissioner of Ohio against them for use taxes. And these taxes were imposed on the society's purchase of office materials, supplies, and equipment. Now, this challenge came before the Board of Tax Appeals, where the Board held that this particular exemption did not apply in this case, that the exemption, for instance, was limited to an exemption with respect to really investment funds and only with respect to ad valorem taxes rather than taxes, sales and use taxes, which were at issue in this case. As a result, the issue before this court is simply whether the Board of Tax Appeals erred in limiting the scope of this exemption.
If this weren't an exempt organization and there were no exemptions, in the state of Ohio, what other taxes are imposed upon investment funds of a non-exempt entity?
An intangible tax on investment funds.
That's it?
I believe that would probably be correct.
If that's the case, that if you're not exempt, your fund would only be subject to one sort of tax, then the words all and every seem to be useless if there's only one tax that funds, which goes to the idea that maybe this statute doesn't mean only the intangible tax, or it exempts many more taxes.
That's correct. I mean, if I understand the point you're making, the statute, by its plain meaning, would indicate that the legislature contemplated other taxes. More than one tax, other than a tax simply on an investment fund. And in that contemplation would have considered sales and use taxes. And so sales and use taxes should be exempt under that statute with respect to the institution as an institution, rather than with respect to merely the funds of the institution. We believe that the Board of Tax Appeals decision is erroneous on basically three grounds. First, we believe the cardinal rule of statutory construction is that if the statute is clear and unambiguous, it should be applied without interpretation. In this case, we think the statute is clear enough and unambiguous enough that the fraternal benefit societies are exempt as institutions, and that the statute in this case, in order to get to the conclusion that this statute is limited to funds or limited only to certain types of taxes, requires the kind of interpretation that a clear and unambiguous statute should not be subjected to. to invest in funds, you essentially negate the reference in the statute to taxes on real estate. Or if you were only allowing an exemption with respect to funds, it would be unnecessary for the legislature to say, but we are not exempting you from taxes on real estate. If the statute is interpreted the way the Board of Tax Appeals has done, it makes the language taxes on real estate ineffectual and nonsensical in this context. Finally, the statute provides that societies such as this are charitable and benevolent institutions, and therefore worthy of exemption. This is consistent with other sales tax and use tax exemptions for charitable type activities and charitable institutions. Consequently, it is extremely plausible that the legislature, in viewing this type of institution, would grant the kind of exemption that we believe we are entitled to here. There is no case law interpreting the scope of this exemption in Ohio. Accordingly, we've asked the court to construe this statute in the least tortured, in the most sensible way, and in a manner which does not negate any element of the statute. If you do that, we believe you must allow the exemption in this case and reverse the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. I will reserve any time I have for rebuttal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Counsel for the fraternal, I'll use that term to refer to the Fraternal Benefit Society in this case, opened his remarks to the court this morning in the same way that he's opened the briefs throughout the case, and that is stating that the statute states that the fraternals are exempt. That is not what the statute states. Statute states the funds shall be exempt. And we would submit that the Board of Tax Appeals correctly decided and upheld the Tax Commission's assessment because it declined quite properly to read the word funds out of the particular exemption statute.
The statute says all those funds are exempt from all and every state, county, district, municipal, and school tax other than franchise tax. Pretty clear. And you have to use funds to purchase equipment. You have to use funds to create the need for the use tax. So I'm having a hard time taking funds out of the fact that you use funds to buy something and you're trying to pay taxes. The language here in simple says all and everything.
2 points that you're raising. One is the same point that Justice Cook was raising previously, and that is, what does this all and every language mean? And I think really this is an instance where perhaps a page of history is worth all of the logic we can bring to bear on this question. The language that we're dealing with here, that funds shall be exempt, was originally enacted back in 1911 as part of a comprehensive reform of the laws regarding fraternals. And if you look back at the context of that time, it's stated as it does now, every fraternal benefit society organized or licensed under this act is hereby declared to be exempt from all and every state, county, district, municipal, and school tax. And if you look at the context of that time, the structure of taxation in Ohio was a structure primarily of property taxation. Indeed, this very language of this provision was put into the old general code as one of a list of property exemptions. In other words, the heading in the 1912 general code was exempt property, and the last thing in that list was this exemption for funds of the entities. And I think that the all or every language was simply then inherited in 1959 and reenacted this language.
They might use though, for example, exempted franchise tax membership and use tax.
In 1959. Well, they could have, except that I think that it was understood that what they were doing was exempting the funds as property because of this historical background. The historical background being that in 1911, there was a general, all corporations, all associations, incorporated or unincorporated, pay both tangible and intangible property taxes on virtually everything. And over time, what happened was in 1931, the General Assembly enacted new legislation that started to split this area up. There were franchise taxes enacted. That was the year that the domestic insurance company franchise tax was first enacted. In that same legislation, the tangible personal property tax took the form that we know it today. It has this used in business requirement, which was new in 1931. And the intangible tax was split out, and it's now codified at 5707.03.04 of the revised code. And as of 1985, the intangible tax is actually zeroed out. It's still on the books, but there's no rate at which it was imposed. The legislature decided to move away from that form of taxation.
Counsel, yes. Then how does the tax commissioner define funds for purposes of this case?
Well, the funds would be property, much as the board defines it. Funds would be property.
Personal property?
Property held to carry out the purposes of the organization.
Well, would that is that limited to personal property or real estate?
It's not clear to me whether the term funds, by its dictionary definition, could theoretically encompass real estate.
It says assets. Dictionary, one of the terms is assets.
Right.
But
and it also said and all other property of any kind, I believe the dictionary definition said. So just reading the word straight up, funds could encompass all sorts of assets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think the legislature putting the exceptions in there for real estate taxes was just making clear in 1911, well, we're exempting the personal property, including tangible and intangible, but not the real property. And that was carried over then when they reenacted the statute in 1959. But I think I wanted to get to this question of the all or every. I think that was important language in 1911, and perhaps less so when it was reenacted in 1959, because of the structure of taxation at the county, school district, and state level is different back now. And I think it was important for the legislature to use that language to make sure that they weren't just exempting it from the state level taxation and not the local level taxation.
But they don't just do that. They list state, county, district, municipal, and school tax. So all and every isn't necessary if they specifically listed all of those events. And just if your argument, they didn't want to exempt some local tax. They specifically say local tax in addition to all and every.
Well, they say all and every state, county, district, municipal, school tax, and I would maintain that all and every applies to all of those categories. They're simply saying all of these categories of taxes, property taxes on the funds, are not to be construed as being.
Your biggest argument is that the use tax is a state tax, correct?
Yes.
The only reason it doesn't apply is that you are saying it doesn't apply to funds.
Well, I'm saying that's not the only reason. It's also rooted in the history of this court's jurisprudence in which similar types of provisions involving assets and property being exempted in these in lieu of provisions. The Salina case comes to mind, the Holloway case, the Phillips Industries cases. Those exemptions did not encompass sales and use tax either, because the sales and use tax is an excise tax on a transaction. A transaction of selling or the transaction of using the property. It's not a tax with respect to holding or owning property. It's not an ad valorem property tax. And that, the board referred to those decisions, and that informed its decision as well. The bottom line here is it's necessary, if it's necessary to take account of all or every, it's also necessary to take account of the word funds. The statute does not say fraternals are exempt. It says their funds shall be exempt. And both history, logic, the precedent of this court indicate that the board's decision is correct. It's drawn the line right. That funds means taxes on funds or taxes on property.
It's the difference between the fund is a static condition of money. I guess you'd say or assets. Nothing's happening. It's in a fund. It's a
Correct.
It's in a safety deposit box. It may be in a savings.
Maybe in a form of a stock certificate,
right,
or
savings account, checking account. The tax, your argument is that the tax is on the transaction.
Right.
Not on the location of the money in the fund.
The sales of use tax is the tax, right, on the transaction, not the tax on the property itself. We don't fill out a form every year repaying in sales and use tax just because you keep holding onto a particular piece of property. It's a tax on a specific transaction. We would submit that to adopt the appellant's position here was simply establish a dangerous precedent of reading an essential word, the word funds, out of an exemption. And that opens the door, and this is perhaps the significance of this case. If there is any ambiguity here, this court's jurisprudence states that the ambiguity must be construed against the taxpayer in favor of the state, because this is an exemption claim. And the taxpayer is seeking special tax advantage.
There are
no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Nugger, you used your time, but you may take 30 seconds to select.
Just two brief points. One, I don't think that you can conclude that the continual reenactment of this statute indicates that something was understood and therefore not stated by the legislature. When the legislature reenacted the statute, it reenacted it at the same time in contemplation of the sales tax, in contemplation of the use tax. And I think when you read the statute, you would understand that they would know that they were exempting this institution from the sales tax, because the sales tax and use tax was in existence at the time of each of these reenactments. And finally, we do not read the word funds out of the statute. We believe it's a word of description in the statute, but not a word of limitation as to what the exemption applies to.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please hear the court.
All eyes. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.
Thank you.